Okay, so today I'm with Chris Valasek, and we're talking about automotive hacking and sort of AutoSec is what the shorthand is. Him and Dr. Charlie Miller have written a paper called "Adventures in Automotive Networks and Control Units." And so, this paper, I mean, this sort of interview and conversation, in our previous conversations on InfoSec, we've talked about sort of, hacking and sort of the policy that's associated with the politics, but we've never sort of, talked about this sort of larger trend of the Internet of Everything, hooking up everything to a network or computerizing and digitizing things that 20 years ago weren't. So we wanted to start with this show, which is it's controversial, it's big, and it's sort of fun to talk about. Let me start off with, Chris, what brought you to car hacking? I mean, was this something that you just woke up one day and said, cars? Or was this more of a sort of gradual process and you said that, this would be sort of an interesting, research project?
Yeah, it was more of a gradual thought process. Charlie was Mr. Apple hacker for a very long time. I did a lot of Windows reverse engineering and exploit writing and things like that. And we've both done that for quite a few years. And we independently read the papers by the academics from the University of Washington and the University of California, San Diego. And they talked about compromising these computers in cars, but they didn't release any information or even what car they were using. So we wanted to say, like, yeah, we want to hack a car, and we want to release all the information so other people can start doing this. And it just got super interesting. I'm a gearhead, personally, so the thought of hacking a car was very, very cool to me.
Interesting. So, I mean, walk us through your sort of research methodology. I mean, it seems like a car is it is a little different than a web browser, and it's a little different than a virtual machine. I mean, did you just go to a random Carfax or car lot and just buy the Prius and the Escape? Or walk us through, I mean.
No, that was actually a long, drawn-out process. Usually, if I want to start looking for bugs in something, I download it or buy a copy of it and then be on my way. With the cars, we realized that we wanted a very specific set of features on the automobile. For example, we wanted the cars to be able to park themselves, or at least have some kind of automated steering functionality, because we figured, hey, there's a computer in the car that steers the car, and if there's a computer that does it, we can either forge the traffic or take over the computer to do that. And the academics that released the paper before didn't ever have control of the steering, so we figured that's how we would contribute more onto this research. It actually took us, I don't know, about a month to locate cars that we wanted, because most people who buy a Prius or an Escape don't get the optional $10,000 technology package on it. So it was actually pretty hard to find the cars. Luckily, we knew someone at a car dealership here in Pittsburgh, and they did the searching for us. And after a couple of days of searching, they found people who were willing to sell the cars, and we ended up buying them.
Interesting. I mean, was there a sort of particular reason why it was the Prius, the Toyota Prius, and the Ford Escape, or was that just something, because they were late model post 2010 and because they were sort of, in wide use?
Yeah. It was more we wanted, to use a Top Gear term, a reasonably priced car that had these features. And we figured a Toyota and a Ford, a Japanese manufacturer and an American manufacturer would tend to be pretty different, which they were. And we wanted to have two very different cars. And we just originally we were going to get a Ford Focus with the titanium package that could park itself, but we couldn't find any 2010 Ford of Focuses that had all the features we wanted, so we actually had to go for the Escape.
Interesting. So, I mean, break down what is a computer system in a car look like? Because I think this is sort of to our audience, this is, I mean, to a lot of people who haven't worked with cars, this is sort of a murky area. So, I mean.
Yeah, it's very much like a bunch of computers on a hub, not a switch, right? So every computer, can hear what every other computer is saying on the network. And that's how these networks in the cars that we were using worked. It's called Controller Area Network, or CAN for short. And the way CAN works is all the computers broadcast all their messages, and they have these specific identifiers. And the computers on the network look for specific identifiers that are pertinent to them. So once you're on the network, you can kind of hear what everyone's saying, and you also can inject messages yourself, because the only thing that you really need to know is the identifier. So after a lot of analysis, we figured out what certain identifiers on the network did, such as, you know, apply the brakes or turn the steering wheel, and you can forge those because there's really no authentication to it. It's just broadcast in nature, and everyone knows everyone else's business.
Interesting. I mean, in terms of sort of reverse engineering and sort of looking at this network in action, I mean, did this require a lot of like custom building, you know, tools and writing your own programs, or was this sort of, you know, something you can go to the manufacturer and get a lot of the tools?
No. That's why Charlie and I released all the tools we wrote. So we wrote a thing called EcomCAT. If, you know, the listeners are familiar with network monitoring, they're probably familiar with Wireshark or TCP dump. We basically wrote that for car networks. Not only can we wrote software that can listen to the car network, we made the software so it could inject traffic as well. So we figured, we actually spent, you know, quite a few weeks writing this software to monitor and inject into the network, and hopefully by releasing it, other security researchers will be able to use it as well. So it's all really hand-rolled stuff.
So, I mean, let's get to sort of the nitty-gritty. I mean, describe, attack surfaces on a car. I mean, besides the, you know, are we talking about sort of brakes, acceleration, and the gauges? Or are we talking about that everything that's connected to these sort of control units can be sort of, you know, messed with and hacked?
Yeah, you know, not everything. There are some kind of safety controls that exist on the code in these computers, but it's really broken into two parts. The first part would be probably some kind of remote compromise or limited physical access compromise, which we didn't focus on the remote part. We focused on what could you do once you were on the network. And we found that once you're on the computer network in the car, that you can pretty much do everything that you want. It may not be as smooth and unadulterated as the actual car does it, but you do have control. For example, the steering in the Prius, if you've seen the video, was kind of very jerky, right? It would go one way or the other depending on what we told it. The car actually shouldn't be able to turn the wheel when it's going in drive, because it's only used for parallel parking in the Prius, which is engaged by reverse, but we tricked the car. We found out the different messages that said, hey, I'm in reverse, and hey, I'm parallel parking myself, and also turn the wheel, and secondly, fourthly, I'm not going fast. So the steering shouldn't work when you're going at speed. There are some safety controls for these things, but we honestly could forge all the messages to quite easily bypass them.
Interesting. So, I mean, in terms of, I think before we go into that, the thing I found most interesting about the paper is that even the horn is sort of hooked up to this network.
Yeah. You know, and it's a term I think in the automotive industry is by-wire, like by-wire. So instead of that having to have physical controls and physical wiring all over the car, they can just have these two copper wires that are the CAN bus lines. And instead of, you know, having to wire the horn the whole way to the actual horn, they can wire it to some body control, which controls a bunch of the stuff, like the horn and the windows and everything. It cuts down on the amount of physical resources they need and reduces the wiring complexity. They can do it all with kind of software in these computers instead of hardware switches.
Interesting. So, I mean, if you were to sort of compare the Prius versus the Escape, which one was sort of easier to get into, to sort of, you know, not only access like the system, you know, the acceleration system or the braking system, but also to sort of alter its functionality?
Yeah, I think they were equally as difficult. I mean, now that we've done it, you know, it probably seems easy to us, but it was hard to reverse engineer a lot of these messages because you have to equate bytes on the wire to physical aspects of a car. Charlie and I both spent weeks just outside parallel parking the cars automatically, right, to try to figure out exactly how these messages work. So it took a lot of time for both automobiles. The reason we had more control of things in the Prius is that it's more technologically advanced than the Escape was. There were more computers controlling more physical attributes of the Prius than there were in the Escape.
So, I mean, do you think, you know, is it, in terms of approaching the car, I mean, is it more systems equals more vulnerabilities, or is it more that, you know, in order to find a vulnerability or to find an access point, you had to, it's really specific to each sort of system and sort of.
Yeah, each car and, you know, each make and model is going to be different. Or models within the same make of the same year could be different. So there could be another 2010 Prius that has different computers than mine does because, you know, they usually run two car runs per model year. So it's really specific onto things.
So, I mean, let's sort of get to the security features. I mean, walk us through. I mean, is this, you know, the security features of a car? What are we talking about? Is it just a matter of authentication? Is it a matter of, you know, encryption? How do you secure a car?
So the inside of the network, once you're on the network, we were, you know, plugged into the ODB2 port. There's, for car controls, there's really no authentication or encryption. It just assumes that every node on that network is there for a purpose because the auto manufacturer put it there, and it implicitly trusts everything they say. So once you're on the network, it's kind of a free-for-all right now. There's really not too many mechanisms stopping you from doing anything. There are safety mechanisms, which I don't think really are security mechanisms. I talked about the steering before, right, that required the car to be in reverse and parallel parking itself and going less than 5 miles an hour. You know, that's just so that, you know, you don't speed up real fast when you're parallel parking because you still control the brake and the gas pedal. The computers don't do that. Those are more kind of safety controls than they are security controls. But with that being said, you know, those kind of things can be augmented to increase the security of the internal network.
When you were looking at these systems, I mean, what could you tell us from the designers? You know, what was their priority? I mean, was it safety, functionality, security? I mean, was there, you know, when you were getting into these systems, did you feel there was a specific sort of ordering from the manufacturer's perspective of, you know, what took priority and what didn't take priority?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, they want to have the best technology because it helps them sell it helps them sell automobiles. And they're also worried about safety as well. They obviously, you can't have things breaking in the car that could jeopardize the safety of its passengers. Security, on the other hand, really, from an internal perspective, isn't in consideration right now. I am sure they're concerned with remote attacks, you know, such via Bluetooth or the telematics unit. But once you're on the network, it really is kind of a free-for-all.
So, I mean, let's get to that. I mean, has sort of Ford and Toyota been supportive of your research? I mean, it seems like, I mean, you guys, from, you know, from my perspective, I mean, it's been, you know, you wrote a good paper, you did, you know, really rigorous research, and it really seems like, you know, everything has been sort of obeyed. There, you know, there's no throwing everything into Gawker and seeing what happens. But, I mean, what has been the manufacturer's response to your research?
Yeah, so unfortunately, it seems that they're only willing at this point to communicate via PR channels. We actually gave them the paper a couple of weeks in advance before releasing any of it before DEF CON because we figured they'd like to know about it. You know, we just kind of got done with all the research, and we were hoping that they'd contact us back and either say, yeah, you know, we're aware of this type of thing, or we weren't aware of this type of thing. Toyota never contacted us back at all. We had a call with Ford with, I believe, some of their engineering people, and originally they seemed to understand what we were doing and understand our motives and our expectations. But after that, everyone seemed to say, hey, this isn't a big deal because they're connected to the vehicle, which, you know, we've stated 100 times over that, yeah, we were connected to the vehicle because we wanted to see what you could do once you were inside. I think the mentality of assuming that you'll never be compromised is a bit naive, right? I don't think anyone says anymore, we have a firewall. We're not worried about anything behind the firewall because you can't get past it. It's just a reality of security and attacks.
I mean, do you think it's a willful ignorance? They're just saying that these type of hacks, this type of access and sort of, you know, attacking an automobile is just not possible? Or is it really, or do you think it's more of a business consideration and saying that, you know,
I think it's more of a business consideration. I don't think there's any of the engineers at any of these places that say that would think there's no way that you can remotely compromise the vehicle. You know, that's saying we wrote perfect code, there's no bugs in it. That doesn't really exist as long as humans are writing the computer code. Cars are, you know, probably a margin market where they really want to outsell their competitor, and anything that could be perceived as a weakness could affect their bottom line. It's not that we picked Toyota and Ford to, you know, pick on them. We just ended up with those cars. It very well could have been other manufacturers and other models.
Interesting. You know, let's sort of switch gears into sort of the themes of the paper. And it really seems like, you know, I think the first question that came into my mind was, you know, would you be able to see these hacks in the wild? That, you know, somebody wants to treat an automobile as a potential vector or whatever. But I mean, because in your paper, it really does seem like it's a lot more physical access and a lot more, you know, you actually have to get into the car to sort of hook it up to the computer and sort of look at these networks. But I mean, you know, do you think, you know, these type of attacks will start, you know, coming up in the wild? And, you know, go ahead.
There's a potential for them to come up in the wild, but it's obviously way less than, say, your typical browser vulnerability. If you want to look for a flaw in Internet Explorer, you download it and you can start reverse engineering it for bugs. If you want to do car research, whether it be local attacks like we did, or local attack plus a remote vector, you're going to need to buy the car, and that's pretty costly. And you need to hire someone quite skilled and have the ability to adapt to different things to do the car research. So right now, you know, it's probably a pretty costly thing to do. I'm not saying it's impossible, but just the amount of people capable of acquiring all the resources to do this research is far less than the person writing exploits for, you know, PDF software or something like that. So it's not impossible, but it's definitely way less than your typical computer hacking type things.
So, I mean, I think the second thing that sort of came up was I took your paper as a critique of the Internet of Everything, that in the sense that I think in, you know, not in the InfoSec community, but sort of in advertising and then and sort of product manufacturing, there seems to be a movement to either hook up everything to the internet or to digitize everything. So, you know, I think with cars, like you're going from a mechanical system 20 years ago that was purely mechanical and sort of, and moving it into more of a digital realm. I mean, you know,
yeah.
Is there a sort of danger in this sort of thing?
That's why we were intrigued by it as well, right? We, Charlie and I both wrote exploits that, you know, could hack various pieces of software. But the end game of that is, like, you lost your pictures and have to wipe your computer, no big deal. With cars, the stakes seem a lot higher, right? If you can compromise one of these things and physically alter moving parts, you know, that the implications of that have a much greater effect than just, you know, pop in a shell on a computer.
I mean, do you think this is a sort of wider trend then? I mean, it seems like,
Well,
you know.
everything. I mean, your toaster is going to have Wi-Fi access. Refrigerators now have Wi-Fi access and connectivity. It's just the way things are going. I'm not saying it's bad. I actually like it. I like all the technology that we're getting. Everything kind of communicates and can be smart about things. It's just when you start doing this, I think you should have security considerations as well, not just neat technology. And it's something that PC software writers and Mac software writers have learned in recent times as well. They're taking security quite seriously these days, because before it was just pushing a product to market and it didn't matter. But now they realize that security matters to these people, so they're building it into their products.
But I mean, it seems like, I think there was a recent hack with the Philips light control system that somebody was able to mess with the lights of the particular building that was hooked up to this light control system. But I mean, do you think these manufacturers are taking security seriously? I mean, because it seems like even if we go back to the software example, people didn't take security seriously until there was another group of folks sort of exploiting software openly and, changing it and what have you. I mean, do you
Yeah,
think? No, go ahead.
we wanted to get this dialogue started now, because no one really wanted to start probably talking about the security of, say, automobiles until there was some tragic event. Someone they realized that someone's car got hacked and it crashed or something, or at least broke down and ruined their day. We figured by bringing this subject to light and getting people talking about it, we at least can get manufacturers focused on security before something bad happens, instead of, how the software vendors did it, where, for a long time Microsoft was the poster child for insecure software. They've changed the way they work and since then, and have actually been quite focused on security. And we're hoping the same thing happens with research like ours. People start to get privy that security is going to be built into their process as they make new technology.
Cool. So, I mean, before we end the interview, we always like to ask our guests to sort of give us, a last word or a last comment to sort of leave the audience with and sort of leave them thinking about, our conversation.
Yeah, I think Charlie and I are really hoping that people grab the paper and the tools and start doing research of their own. We only looked at two cars. We didn't have budget to buy every car in the world. So it'd be great if people took the tools that we released to them and start looking at other cars, and then we can all start talking about ways to make these systems more secure. So we hope by putting information out there, you have more eyes on the problem. With more eyes on the problem, you end up really with a more secure product.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure.